When people think about the history of racism in the U.S., many think of slavery and segregation in the South. There's often less focus on racism that existed in places like the Midwest, where discrimination often took on different forms. Sundown towns were places that didn't allow people of color to be in a city after dark, and they were common around the Midwest for a lot of the 20th century. Lori Lambrees recently asked WPR's Why Wisconsin project about sundown towns in Wisconsin. That's after she found out that Manitowoc, the city where she lives, had been a sundown town.
I was shocked. I don't even remember when I first heard that term, but somebody was talking about it, and sundown town, and I'm like, what is a sundown town? And they said what it was, and I'm like, no way. There's no way that Manitowoc was ever that. And I kind of checked into it, and it was, and I was just like, I can't imagine.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you heard stories about these kind of sundown restrictions, formal or informal, in your own community's past? Why do you think this history isn't very well known? What's the right way for communities to look back and acknowledge, maybe even make amends for these kind of things? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sabrina Robbins is a public historian and board member of the grassroots group African Heritage, Inc. She's also a member of the American Association of State and Local Histories, the Wisconsin Historical Society, and advisory member of the Unvarnished Project. Sabrina, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Stephen Berry is an associate professor of history and American culture at the University of Michigan. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Stephen, what do we know about how common these sundown town arrangements were in the Midwest and in Wisconsin?
That's a great question. It was pretty common, especially from the late 19th century into most of the 20th century. And as you noted, in some places, these practices still continue. But it was a common feature of the Midwest, as well as the West and the East. The place where we see fewer sundown towns is in the South. And in part, that's because the South had its own kind of racial system parallel to this at the same time, something we know well in terms of segregation and Jim Crow practices. And so in lots of respects, the practices of sundown towns is a response West, Midwest, East, and it's very much connected to other kinds of Jim Crow practices in the same period.
And Sabrina, you say we should look at sundown towns, but also see them as kind of, a continuum of different forms of discrimination and exclusion of people of color. Can you talk about that range of things people might have encountered?
Absolutely. When looking at the Black experience, sundown town sort of denotes, leave before the sun goes down. And it really doesn't look at some of the other practices and laws and other ways of enforcing to monitor and control Black movement, mindset, and just its mere existence. And so while we have seen some progress, we have current day practices going on, driving while Black, sleeping while Black. Members of white communities come and confronting Black teens and others. Why are you here? And, give me your driver's licenses. So those types of attitudes and behaviors are born out of sundown town Jim Crow laws and slavery itself. So I like to say that we need a more functional view of what sundown town is that's still impacting Black life in terms of healthcare, education, jobs, and other forms of just normal life outcomes.
And Sabrina, you were part of a research team looking into Appleton and their history, whether or not it was a sundown town. Can you give us a taste of the sort of things you found?
Absolutely. I just want to back up and say that we started this project as a truth and reconciliation engagement so that we can move forward to a more equitable town and more equitable region. When we started the project, many of the residents said that Blacks didn't come into the region until about the late 1960s. In reality, we have documented firsthand voice experiences dating back to the 1700s. So the number one finding that we have is that people simply said they didn't know. They didn't know it was a sundown town. They didn't know that Blacks were in the area. And we had really lost the community memory of Black presence at all. And so our research was very important because it documented Black life right after the Reconstruction. We had a Black aristocracy, and members of that aristocracy were business owners. So hair, owning hair salons, working as social workers and educators in the area. We had a gentleman, Joseph Elmore, that owned a circus, and that we had a thriving community in the early, in the 1865s era. And so, again, that memory is not included in the Appleton history at all. And so now we have a way to include more voices and have a more inclusive view of what is Appleton, who lived here, and what was life like.
Now, Stephen, for sundown towns, can you talk about how they worked on a practical level? And I understand some might have had a formal law, some it was just something that everybody knew.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just add too that sundown towns, especially today, we're focusing on places that excluded Black people, but we also have evidence of sundown towns that excluded Asian Americans, Native Americans, Jewish populations. And so in depending on where it is and the various groups who are in that area, there are lots of ways in which we see various examples of racial and ethnic exclusion. And in terms of how it worked, as you noted, sometimes towns did pass a law or an ordinance declaring that a particular group couldn't live in that town. It was sometimes okay for people to be in the town during the day if they were working, but the ideal that they had to be out by sundown was, of course, the notion that they couldn't live in that town. And sometimes that was an ordinance, but also perhaps even more often it was through other means, informal means, that it was enforced, and the ways in which, you know, there's an example of police escorting people who arrive on a train at the railroad station, escorting them out of town. There are examples of signs being put up on the edges of towns that are often with overtly racist language, stating that a particular group has to be out at sundown. And often there were town whistles that would go off at the end of the day that was signaling that it was time for anybody who was a Black person to be out of town. And in addition to these, the ways in which it was implemented, it was also enforced often through, in some cases, through violence or the threat of violence, including mobs forming, especially if there was a triggering event to drive a particular group out of a town. But also it functioned from people who probably thought they were being helpful by saying, oh, you shouldn't be in this town after this this time. And that sort of word of mouth of people essentially policing these places themselves. And of course, then reputation spreads about particular places that these are places to avoid. All of those things are part of how these practices were implemented and enforced over time.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Hal is with us in Wausau. Hal, hello. Are you there, Hal?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I grew up in central Illinois in a sundowner town, and I was in grade school in the late 50s and early 60s. My parents owned a small six-unit motel, and there was an ordinance. I believe there was an ordinance on the book saying that people of color could not be in town after sundown. And if a person's car would break down, it was right along Highway 51, a busy highway. The police knew the only place they could bring a family or a person of color to spend the night was to my parents' motel.
And that's what you grew up seeing, Hal.
Yeah, I did. I think part of the reason that that happened is in the late 1800s, it was a coal mining town and there was a strike. And the rich coal mine owners brought in black strike breakers, and there ended up being a riot and a mob, and I think a few people got killed, and I think that's when they passed the ordinance back in the late 1800s.
Hal, thanks for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. We'll pick up with our guests in just a couple moments, Sabrina Robbins and Stephen Berry, two historians with us to answer a Why Wisconsin question about the history of sundown towns here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have memories of these formal or informal racial restrictions, maybe as Hal did, where you grew up or in your own community now? Do you think it's important to document that history and look into it? And what do we do about it then? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about a Why Wisconsin question we recently got from a listener asking about the history of sundown towns in Wisconsin. We're talking to Sabrina Robbins with African Heritage, Inc. and Stephen Berry with the University of Michigan. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your own memories of racial restrictions, official or informal, where you've lived. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sabrina, you talked about connecting the dots between the past and what happens in communities nowadays. What do we lose if we don't remember, if we don't look at the history of sundown towns and other kinds of racial exclusions from our past?
We lose several things. One, understanding of how a city came to be. One of the great things about history is just knowing not only your founding or origins, but what are the experiences of people that live in that area. And if you don't have all the information, you miss the opportunity to have the full understanding of what life is. The other thing we miss is we repeat the same mistakes. So as we look at communities in northern Wisconsin, including Appleton, if you don't know that Blacks exist in the area, that they were contributors, then you would be confused by the Black Lives Matter activity that took place in a region that is overwhelmingly white. And so as you look at it today, many of the local residents were very surprised that cities like Appleton and Green Bay and some of the other smaller cities all had Black Lives Matter activities and marches going on, because they don't understand the connection between our region and the larger national narrative, or even the regional narrative, when you look at what is our relationship to Milwaukee, to St. Louis, and to Chicago, even. And so having a fuller understanding of your region helps provide more context and understanding of where you fit in the larger national narrative of American history and African American history.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Chuck is with us in Dodgeville. Chuck, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
Well, I just wanted to say that I recently read the book Sundown Towns by James Lewin, and it's an excellent book. I'd recommend it to anyone, and it really chronicles how sundown towns evolved, especially in the Midwest, including Wisconsin, and how he said how perhaps 100 years or so ago, there were a lot more black people living in areas like the Fox Valley and southeast Wisconsin. But they were actually pushed out, and then within 50 years or so, say by the 1960s or 70s, that they were almost exclusively kept, or almost kept, I guess you would say, in Milwaukee, in inner city Milwaukee. They were, and the second point I wanted to make was, author can confirm this, it was said that towns that had the word green in it were, that was code for African Americans not coming there or not living there. So you have towns in Wisconsin, and I'm not sure if that included Green Bay or not. I assumed it was, but towns like Spring Green and Greenfield or Greendale and things like that.
Chuck, thanks for the call. Steven, I think you're familiar with that book. Do you have an answer for Chuck's question about the green part of city names?
Yes, it's an interesting point. I am familiar with that book, and will also encourage people who are listening to read that book. It is the most extensive research that's been collected on sundown towns nationally, including quite a bit about Wisconsin. And I also want to mention that there's a website connected to that research, and which you can probably find by Googling sundown towns or by going to the History and Social Justice website, which is hosted at Tougaloo College. And in response to that question, I know that that Jim, who did this research, he did make that point that there was quite a number of places with green in the title that were also sundown towns. And I think for his part, it only rose to the level of, is this a coincidence or not? And I don't think he was ever able to conclusively suggest that there was a connection to that, that it was most likely something coincidental, but also something that Jim found particularly interesting in doing the research for this book.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're going to put that a link to that map up at WPR.org/Central Time, a searchable map of sundown towns by state. Back to your calls now. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a couple quick comments and kind of a question. So I majored in history, and one of the courses that I took was about Wisconsin history specifically, and actually one of our textbooks was from a WPR personality. I can't remember her name offhand, but sorry. But we learned about sundown towns, and talked about those in class. But I've observed since then that most people I've spoken with aren't really aware of that chunk of Wisconsin's past, and I think that has sort of moved into the modern era in, the fact that Wisconsin is one of the worst states to be a young Black male in. And I think there's still a lot of progress to be made in the state. But I live in Appleton, and something that I've seen over the last, 30 years has been that we've gotten more Black people moving to the area. So I think that's nice to see.
Michael, I'm going to jump in because we don't have too much time left. To his first point, Sabrina, about spreading the word about the existence of this history. This is something I know you've spent a lot of time on. You've worked, among other things, on traveling museum exhibits and more. How do you think the story needs to be told and spread about sundown towns and other institutions like them?
Sure. It needs to be told widely and told by many. And so I'm very encouraged that this caller is from Appleton. I live there. We partnered with Lawrence University, the police department, the History Museum at the Capitol. So our pop-up museum has had over 100,000 views. The schools, it travels around to all of the K-12 schools, City Hall, the universities. We participate in programs such as this. Our work still continues. And so many people in Appleton and the surrounding areas are not aware of this. And so we have to bring it to the memory, link it to today's activities so that we have a path of how to move forward and no longer engage in sundown town practices. That is there. And and join in the work and make this more of a community project and not just something that one or two of us carry out.
And in just our last minute or so, Stephen, are you seeing communities doing, more communities doing the work that Sabrina has been doing in the Appleton and Fox Valley area, trying to find these stories and retell these histories?
Yes, I am. And I'm really glad that Sabrina mentioned that. That's my hope, too, is that people will want to take up this research. We receive hundreds of emails a week, often about potential sundown towns, and also people reaching out, wanting to talk about how they can do this research and what the historical method is. And I would say too, that I very much hope that other groups will want to take this up, as well as take up this conversation about sundown towns, not only to talk about the past, and I agree it is really important to tell the truth about the past, but also to think about the future and think about what kind of community do they want to be in the future, and how do you become a welcoming community in the future, and connect that to some of these historical incidents in the past.
We'll leave it there. Stephen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Sabrina, thanks for being with us. That was, we've been hearing from Sabrina Robbins, public historian and board member of African Heritage, Inc. She's an advisory member of the Unvarnished Project. And Stephen Berry is associate professor of history and American culture at the University of Michigan, with us today to answer a Why Scotson question about the history of sundown towns in Wisconsin and to share how you can research racial restrictions in your own community.